Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome. We're thrilled to have so many people joining us today. I know people are trickling in, but we have quite a few registered for today. My name is Molly Marin. I am the webinar coordinator for New York State RTI Technical Assistance Center. I have just a few reminders today before we get started. The PowerPoint for today's webinar is available on our webpage at nysrti.org/webinars. People have asked for that in the past to be able to follow along and take notes, so we have made that available for you. At the end of today's webinar, I will post a link to an evaluation. It's a very short evaluation. If you could please take a few minutes to complete that, we would very much appreciate your feedback. Also, I want to point out during the webinar, we do have a chat box, and feel free to use that throughout the webinar if you have any questions for Dr. Johnson. Today's webinar is the first in our Strand 5 series. It focuses on implementation of RTI in the middle school. We have five webinars in this strand, taking place on five consecutive Wednesdays throughout October, taking us into November, the last one being November 5th. More information and registration information is available on our webpage. If you would like to join us for an upcoming webinar, we would love to see you come back. Today's topic is examining RTI components at the middle school. We are very pleased today to have Dr. Evelyn Johnson with us. Dr. Johnson is a professor of special education at Boise State University and the executive director of Lee Pesky Learning Center, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to improve the lives of people with learning disabilities. Dr. Johnson is a screening tool review committee member for the National Center for Response to Intervention and co-author of three books, all published by Corwin Press, Identification and Evaluation of Learning Disabilities, How RTI Works in Secondary Schools, and RTI, A Practitioner's Guide to Implementation. At this point, I would like to welcome Dr. Evelyn Johnson.
Thanks, Molly, and hello to everybody out there, and thanks so much for logging in this afternoon. I am going to spend just a couple of minutes talking about the series agenda for this grouping of webinars, and then we'll get started with today's specific topic. What we've put together is a series of five different webinars, each addressing how RTI works in the middle school setting. And so today's session is really going to be an overview to just make sure that we have some common language about what RTI is, what the critical components of an RTI model are, what that looks like in terms of the middle school setting. But we'll keep everything sort of at the bird's eye view during this session. And then with each subsequent session, we'll get into a lot more detail on the various components. So next week, for example, we'll drill down much further into considerations about different assessment pieces. And then we'll take on the more of the logistics of implementing RTI in middle schools and talk about scheduling. Then we'll look at what effective intervention looks like in an RTI model at middle school. And then finally, we'll take a look at how we do that assessment both during implementation and as we continue with RTI implementation. What are those critical markers that let us know whether we're achieving the goals that that we hope to accomplish when we implement an RTI system? Okay, so I'd like to start out first by just getting a sense of how many of you are already implementing RTI in your school. So if you could respond to that poll, that would be great. Oh my goodness. Oh, I saw 100% right away. I was like, wow. Okay, we'll give the system just a minute to finish recording all the responses, but it looks like a good deal of you are already at some stage of implementation. Okay. Molly, I'm assuming you'll end the poll. Okay. So it looks like a good deal of you are already at some stage of implementation, and that's great. So a lot of what we go over today will hopefully be very familiar to you. And then as we go through the webinar series, we will be able to get more specific about your questions. Okay, great. So I think it's really important whenever we talk about response to intervention, especially in the current time period where a lot of the conversation now has shifted from talking about RTI to MTSS or multi-tiered systems of support, that we just make sure we have a common understanding of what we mean when we talk about RTI. I always joke, I've been working in the field of response to intervention now for 12 years, and you know, we always like to change things up in terms of how we present things and what models we use. So I tired of the triangle really quickly, and what I wanted to present in this slide is just this notion that, you know, the special education field, really when we started, special education for a long time was kind of the only way that we had the possibility of providing interventions or supports to students who were struggling, right? You were either in the general education, or if you needed a lot of support, you had special education, and there really was no in between. And so special education, and in particular the field of learning disabilities, really became like, I don't want to say a dumping ground, but kind of a dumping ground for kids who were struggling. And what that did was it taxed our special ed system so that we were no longer as effective as we could be, because we were simply trying to serve the needs of too many children that maybe didn't necessarily need to be there, okay? And what the effect of that is that it waters down interventions for everyone. Okay, and so as the special ed system continued to become overtaxed and therefore less effective, there was this sort of shift in our thinking of how best to really solve this problem of all the children that we have who are struggling learners. And so we saw things like the Regular Education Initiative in the 80s, and then standards-based education, and assuring that we were integrating and including all students with disabilities in accountability systems. And then finally, this move to scale in a very big way a system of response to intervention, with the idea that if we could provide a really solid foundation of instruction with this sort of intermediary or, you know, intervention system that wasn't quite for students with learning disabilities, but was more intensive than general education instruction alone, that we could help really reduce this problem that we were experiencing of this overload in special education. And so things really shifted towards general ed models and really improving our tier one or our core instructional program, which is a really good thing. However, I think that in the last couple of years, what now has happened is that there's such an emphasis on core instruction or tier one and tier two or our intervention system that it's almost as if special education is seen as something to avoid at all costs. And we really don't want that mindset either. What we hope that we accomplish through any RTI system, whether it's middle school, elementary school, or high school, is that we create a truly responsive instructional system that is fluid enough to meet the needs of all our learners, right? And so by fluid, the key difference between what we've had in the past is that we don't want students to be stuck in a track. We want the system to respond, to be able to identify kids when they're struggling, be responsive as early and as effectively as possible so that learning challenges don't later become intractable. And we also don't want to sort of condemn students to lower level courses if they're only experiencing either temporary challenges or very specific challenges that with appropriate accommodations and support, really their needs can be met in the core instructional program. And so I like to talk now about RTI, not so much as a pyramid anymore, although that model still works, but rather this notion of our chain and ensuring that all of the links in that chain are strong and are integrated and connected to each other, right? Because if our system of interventions does not support what happens in the core instructional program, then that's not an effective system. We might have the components of an RTI model, but we don't actually have an RTI system. Similarly, if our special education program is viewed as sort of the final stop when all else has failed, that's not part of a system. That's sort of a last resort. And special education should really be about ensuring that we have the capacity and the ability to provide that individually designed instruction for kids who need it. When we talk about RTI models, the National Center for Response to Intervention, and which is now the National Center for Intensive Intervention, identified the critical components that are on the slide in front of you. So even though different schools and different states had put different parameters on RTI models, the common features of an RTI system were identified as including these six different items. Okay, so the screening, we know we need it in order to identify who's at risk, and we need screening to be a routine and a universal occurrence, because the idea of a preventive and responsive system is that we recognize that different students will experience different types of learning challenges at different points in their student career. And some of it may be related to academics, some of it may be related to transitions, sometimes it's related to just life circumstances. And so by having a responsive universal screening system, we are able to continually identify kids who are potentially at risk for poor academic or behavioral outcomes. We also know that we have to routinely monitor the progress of students within our system. So definitely we need to do this in our core program. And we already have some of those systems built in, right? We have standardized assessments, we have grades in courses, end of course exams, we have report cards, and lots of different ways that we help monitor progress. And they don't happen every week, but they happen a number of times throughout the year. We know that for kids who receive more intensive intervention, we want to get more frequent monitoring of their progress, because with any intervention, and especially once we get into the secondary setting, we face that terrible tyranny of time, right, where we have a lot of ground to cover, and we only have so much time left with the student in our K-12 system. And so we need to know now whether an intervention is effective and whether the student is responding to our instructional practice. Okay. We also know that responsive instructional system really has to rely on both effective instructional practice and on the use of research or evidence-based interventions, right? And as I mentioned in the previous slide, these two components really need to be intertwined and connected to each other. So just like a preventive health model where we want to get out in front of any health concerns, and we do that through things like inoculations, like, you know, well, right now here in Idaho, everywhere you go, it's, you know, get your flu shot. And so the idea is that if we can provide that vaccination, we're going to prevent a lot of people from getting seriously sick and needing that more intensive medical support later in the season. Okay, and the same idea holds true for instruction. If we're providing the best possible instruction in our core program, then hopefully that diminishes the need for a very large intensive intervention system, and we can reserve those more intense resources for the kids who truly need them. So those are really the key components. And then these last two items, data-based decision making and leadership, are really the things I think that tie the whole process together and transform RTI from a list of components into a system. So we need to ensure that we use the data that we collect in our screening, our progress monitoring, and our outcome measures to really drive our instructional decision making. And when I say drive our instructional decision making, that needs to happen at all levels. So oftentimes when we talk about database decision making, we think about it at the student level. And that's important, right? We want to respond to the data, to a student profile, and make adjustments accordingly. But we also want to do it at a systems level. So we want to use data from our core instructional program, for example, to help identify where we might prioritize our intervention resources, right? I know this is true in Idaho, and I have a feeling that it's also true in New York. We, in public education, we live in a world of limited resources. And so while we'd like to have a very expansive intervention system, the reality is that we're probably going to have to prioritize based on where the most need is. And so a data-based decision-making process is going to help us do that, so that when we have to make those hard decisions, we're doing it based on data. Where are we going to see the most effect for the use of our resources? And all of that obviously is driven by leadership. So without a strong leadership team, and that's not just the principal, but it's, you know, key teacher leaders across the school, and especially the case in secondary settings. Without that strong leadership that can really bring the process together, that can provide all of the support systems and decisions that really help facilitate RTI implementation, you know, if we don't have that, then really we're just back to having this sort of list of things that we do without it really turning into a responsive instructional system. Okay, so those are the critical components of an RTI model, regardless of the grade level that we're talking about. But when we first started with RTI implementation, again, about 12, 13 years ago now, the focus was really heavily on elementary school because, again, the idea was that we're trying to prevent learning problems at as early as possible, because all of the research indicates that, you know, earlier intervention is more effective, right? There's less time for that academic gap to widen, which means that there's less time for the child to develop all of that social and emotional issues that, you know, such as low self-esteem, frustration, anxiety, that can further compound those learning challenges. And so when we started talking about how do we adapt the RTI model to a secondary setting? There was a lot of debate, at least in the literature, about what really is the purpose of RTI at middle school or in secondary settings. Can we really just take a model that is in use at the elementary setting and say, okay, now let's do this in middle school? And so a lot of folks thought, you know, by the time we get to secondary, we really already kind of know, and I'm using fake quotation marks here. we already know which kids are at risk, which kids are struggling, which kids need support. And so the idea is that we really are there to provide ongoing support for struggling learners, and that we might need to provide some of that temporary support for either more advanced skill mastery or just for that transition. So in Idaho, our schools, some transition at sixth grade, some middle schools at seventh grade. Regardless, the transition is significant for a lot of kids because the level of independence in terms of the expectations, the changing expectations across teachers, you all are familiar with all of the challenges of that transition to middle school. And so the thinking was, you know, RTI really should just be seen as intervention for that population. And then other writers said, wait a minute, you know, yes, we agree with those purposes, but let's think about this some more. We know from research conducted by ACHIEVE and the American Institute for Research on identifying risk factors for dropping out, those risk factors actually are present as early as, you know, third grade, but certainly by sixth grade, there are some definite markers that when they are present, exponentially increase a student's risk for dropping out of school. And so is there a way that we can identify those markers and then put in a preventive system to provide more support for kids at risk for dropping out? We also know that there are students who we call late emergent reading disabled children. So those kids who on the spectrum, you know, are not severely disabled, but who are able to, through compensatory skills, maintain grade level performance through elementary school when those supports are present. And then once again, that academic and that cognitive load significantly increase, can really be challenged or overwhelmed with the learning process. The same is true for kids who have significant executive functioning issues and some kids with more language-based math disabilities, right? So even though we know that learning disabilities are neurologically based, sometimes they don't present until the child is placed in an environment in which they simply don't have their compensatory skills are no longer sufficient for helping them keep up. And then finally, we have an increased number of students nationally who are English language learners. And is there something we could do to prevent that population from becoming at risk for dropping out? Okay. So we really see that there are two primary purposes for implementing RTI in middle school. So, based on your own experience, your student population, just your own thinking about what RTI is for, which purpose of RTI do you think would be most appropriate in your school setting for addressing the needs of your student population? Okay, it's really fun seeing the votes come in. see a lot of people indicating both. And some with just a focus on intervention. And that seems like a really reasonable breakdown of responses, right? Because it's quite conceivable that we would have both populations within our school. So we would want a system that was both preventive in nature, as well as responsive to kids who come in with learning challenges or more intensive support needs. And we could also think about school settings. And again, I'm originally from the East Coast, but I've been in Idaho now for 7 years. And depending on where you go in Idaho, there are some schools where they're simply, because of their size and because of maybe the isolation of the district, that really an intervention model would be sufficient because there's not a lot of student out-migration or student in-migration. The community's really tight, for lack of a better word. And so that prevention piece really does happen at the elementary school. And by the time we get to middle, we're focused more on intervention. Okay, that's great. Okay, thank you everybody for responding. Okay. What I'd like to do now is, now that we've sort of introduced the RTI model and talked in a little bit more detail about what the components that have been identified at a national level are, what the two primary purposes for RTI middle school are, what I'd like to do is just review some of the research on RTI in middle school. And to be honest with you, there's not a lot, right? There's simply just not a lot of research out there right now on what is best practice for an RTI system in the middle school setting. There is a significant amount of research on the specific components. And again, as we go through the webinars in the following weeks, we'll look more closely at research on progress monitoring, for example, or on what screening tools are most effective at secondary setting, or what interventions work for kids in middle school. But what I wanted to present today was the results of a middle school evaluation study that was conducted by the National Center for Response to Intervention. It was published about 2 years ago. And Sarah Pruitt led the effort. And I actually got to be involved in collecting some of the data from a couple of the schools. And so what we did was we developed a survey that really went into a significant amount of detail about the various components of RTI systems and RTI models based on what was known about best practices at the time. And then we, through connections from the center with state departments of education and other connections from years of work and again, relationships from people who were on the middle school team, we identified 40 schools that were pretty far along in their implementation of an RTI process. And we administered the survey and did a number of site visits to confirm survey results so that we could really collect a nice description about what RTI models look like in different settings, whether in the middle school environment, those critical components that we identified were actually all present and what did they look like, how did they differ in the middle school compared to the elementary school? And then were there some things that were specific to the middle school setting with regard to assessments or instructional materials or practices as part of the RTI process that we simply didn't have reflected on our checklist? Okay. And so based on that study, we found a couple of interesting results. So at the time, all of the schools that we surveyed indicated that they were really using the RTI model as an intervention system and not so much as a preventive model. And they also identified that their focus was largely on academics and more specifically on literacy and reading needs. Okay, there were very few schools that at the time included math as part of their RTI system. They all tended to get started with literacy or more specifically reading. Okay. There wasn't a single school that also viewed performance in the content areas as an area in need of intervention. So all of that effort was on improving reading skills and with very little integration in terms of supporting kids with reading challenges in social studies or in science. Okay. Some of that's changed with some of the schools that were included. I haven't kept up with all of them. I keep up with three of them closely, one in Colorado, one here in Idaho, and one in Michigan. Okay. When we asked the schools about their instructional practices, most of the schools indicated that they began the RTI process with a focus on tier two or intervention. So one of the schools that I worked with really closely in Colorado, they had been a high performing, they're in Colorado Springs, and they had been a high performing school for a really long time. They're located in a historically affluent area. And then because of some redistricting and some migration to the area, they found quickly that they were serving a much more diverse student population than they had in the past. And the principal there, Lori Smith, who is actually a co-author on the How RTI Works in Secondary Schools, you know, she said, wait a minute, we've gone from a high-performing school to a school that really has a lot of kids who need support in reading. And she said initially the response from her staff was, well, our scores are going down because it's because of those kids, those new kids that are coming into our school. And Lori's response was, well, guess what? They're our kids now. And so what we've done in the past that was effective isn't going to be enough anymore. So let's really rethink what we're doing here. And they started with implementing what they called a literacy lab because they had such a high number of kids who were struggling with reading. What they found, I'm using their specific school as an example to talk more concretely, but this was true across many of the schools we surveyed. What they found was that getting started with intervention was at the time, it made sense as an entry point for their school, right? Because they were trying to solve this problem. What they found over time was that they really, you know, an intervention, a literacy lab, wasn't really going to be enough unless they also then looked at their general instructional program and thought about, okay, well, if we have all these struggling readers, then what does that, how is that going to affect what we do in the content areas? And what does that mean for the way we provide instruction? And so after the first year, they developed a really strong professional learning community that was focused on differentiation and universal design integration to provide those kinds of accommodations and supports for kids who had literacy challenges so that they could keep up in the content area. And lots of schools ended up sort of going through that more, a backdoor route to RTI. So even though we talk about it in terms of a system, and we often, when we talk about it sort of in an abstract way, we usually encourage schools to start with their core instructional program. For some reason, at the secondary level, it seemed like it was more manageable to get started by that focus on providing a tier two intervention, which then sort of drove the rest of the school to really rethink what core looked like. Okay. In terms of providing that instruction, nearly all of our participating schools offered intervention classes as an elective. So in this wasn't true of all 40 schools, but most had, you know, 5 required periods and then two electives, or, you know, some breakdown like that. And so for kids whose performance on state assessments in reading or in math or in writing for states that had writing, they would offer intervention classes as one of their electives. And I put it in quotes because it really wasn't an option, right? It was, for most students, it was a required elective. We did talk to some schools that got a lot of parent pushback when they tried to implement that system, saying that, you know, the electives like more of the technical, more of the vo-tech courses or arts or music were key courses that were really keeping their kids interested and at school. And so some schools chose to present the information to the parents and let them be involved in the decision making. Most of those schools that went that route later ended up having parents say, you know what, if we don't address the reading and these foundational academic skills, I can see that at some point, you know, these technical classes are not going to be enough. And so they ended up changing their policy. When we looked at database decision making, this was an area, and again, the study was published in 2012, but a lot of the data was collected in 2009 and 2010. So, you know, about 4 or 5 years ago. And since then, there's been a tremendous growth in the number of assessment tools available and applicable to the secondary setting. But at the time, the assessment pieces and that database decision making was really where we saw a lot of holes, I guess, in middle school implementation of RTI. So many schools simply relied on performance on state assessments as their screening tool. So what did you earn last year on the state reading, on the state math assessment, and use that as a way to indicate which kids were going to be in need of intervention. They slowly then moved to include CBMs for reading. Most of them used a maze, right? So because of the efficiency of administration mostly, and as a way to get some screening data for kids who were moving into their system and they didn't necessarily have state performance data on them. Or, you know, New York, being in Idaho, this is true of nearly any state I would talk to, but our standards are actually very low. So meeting standards in Idaho, that will change now with our SBAC, but at the time, our state standards were very low nationally. And so you could, in theory, pass, be proficient in reading in Idaho and then move to New York and your reading skills are no longer getting you at that proficient level. And so those CBMs were really helpful in catching those kids who came in either without or with different state level data. The other thing that we found in the evaluation study was that decision rules, database decision rules, so at what point do we say, you know, this performance places you in tier 2 intervention? At what point do we say you've made sufficient progress, you no longer need intervention? Those kinds of decision points were, actually there was no school that really had any of that clearly established. And most of the reason why was because there simply was not the variety of tools available that there are now. That was part of the reason. But the other part was really more of a logistical one. So once schools were able to manipulate the schedule just to get the literacy lab in place, to even think about a truly fluid system where students would move in and out, There was for larger schools especially, there was simply no way to make that system fluid. And so the decision rules were, if you go in this year, you're there for the remainder of the year. If you end up with a performance that, you know, helps you meet grade level expectations, then the following year you wouldn't need that support. So it wasn't a terrible way to get started, but the decision rules were really driven more by pragmatics rather than data-based rules about student performance and student growth, if that makes sense. Okay. For progress monitoring responsibilities, those were often assigned to an instructional aide or the literacy lab teacher, right? So whoever the intervention person was. And again, it was great to see so many schools get started with that process, but the challenge was in communicating information about student progress beyond that literacy lab. And so over time, we saw schools do things like create shared drives where everyone who worked with that student would then have access. We saw schools get much more responsive about having set times and meetings to update on student progress and then share that information with all of that student's teachers. But that process took a while to get into place. Okay. And then for curriculum-based measures and progress monitoring, we really saw a variety of tools. So very few schools indicated using any curriculum-based measures beyond reading. And if they did do progress monitoring in math or a content area, they would use end of course or textbook published materials. The last piece that we looked at for the middle school evaluation study was outcomes. And at the time, there were really too few schools that had reliable enough data to really make decisions about how effective their RTI process was, right? It was all about implementation and working out the logistics and getting through the kinks of the process. However, most schools, even though they couldn't yet report significant changes in student outcomes, they did report an increase in their collaboration efforts. And a lot of schools also reported that that the implementation of RTI caused them to go revisit some of their policies about attendance, about behavior, about decisions, about whether a child was placed in the intervention as a result of starting the RTI process. Okay. So it had an overall net positive effect on the schools functioning as a responsive system. And that was, I think that's a good thing. Okay. So when we, from that evaluation study and from our work, from our more in-depth work with a couple of middle schools and junior highs, we then went back to those critical components that we talked about at the beginning, and we said, okay, in what ways might they shift somewhat at middle school? And so for screening, where we think some of the changes might come, we think we need academic screening in reading, writing, and math at a minimum. We think that if schools can implement a combined academic and behavioral focus through a school-wide positive behavior support system, then behavior screenings are also incredibly helpful, especially at the middle school. And then we'll take a look at this in more depth next week, but the National High School Project, and now it's been assumed by the American Institute for Research, developed something called the Early Warning System. It was originally developed for the high school level, but it now has a middle school early warning system tool that identifies the key or high yield indicators that when they are present, again, exponentially increase the likelihood that a child will drop out of school. Okay, they might not drop out tomorrow, but within a few years. And there's one that's specifically tailored for middle school, and it includes data that schools routinely collect, but it does it in a way that helps create flags when kids are over the threshold for these various indicators, and they include things like attendance, behavior referrals, performance on previous exams, the number of course failures in those core courses. And again, we'll look at it in more detail next week. We think that progress monitoring is going to look very much the same as it does in elementary settings. And we think that norm reference standardized curriculum-based measures for literacy, so both reading and writing measures, and for math, including algebra measures, and again, we'll look at some of these in more detail next week, are really going to be critical because those are related to those high-yield indicators, right? When kids are not successful at those core courses, it means they don't get the credits, and it usually impacts other content areas and puts them, at increased risk for dropping out. We also, in recent years, have seen an increase in content area literacy progress monitoring. So that's the work of Chris Espen and her colleagues, who have identified vocabulary matching as really one of the most effective ways of helping to identify progress in the content areas. A number of years ago, I also did a small study using content area textbooks and creating maze passages from those content area textbooks to see whether we could create reliable passages to test comprehension. And the impetus for that study was feedback that we got from our work with middle schools, and they were saying, look, current reading passages really overestimate students' ability to read because they're all narrative. And, you know, so the kids understand the basic plot of a story, but, you know, give them a book to read about, you know, the life cycle or energy, and suddenly, you know, their reading skills don't hold up. So what I really need to know is how well they can read informational text. Well, with the coming of the Common Core, we know that there's going to be assessments that are more responsive to reading informational text. And the good news is that what we found is that we could create reliable passages simply using content area textbooks, and that they provided a much better gauge of a student's reading ability when we think about reading in terms of reading to learn. So I see a couple questions. So is there any thought reason to split the RTI approach for grades 5-6 separate from 7-8? Those are good questions. What we have found, and what's been found nationally, and I don't think that we've included the fifth grade component. Usually we see a difference in middle school starting either at sixth grade or at seventh grade. And the research in terms of what those high yield indicators look like and what best practices should be, really show that it's not that the grade's not important, but what really is more important is that transition, right? So just that simple move from one context to the other, whether that switch takes place at sixth grade or seventh grade, it's really about navigating a new environment with those different expectations. And so if there is something that's done differently in fifth grade, you know, in a school that has a fifth through eighth, then it might make sense to look at different practices for fifth grade, but probably not, right? Probably that transition is what's going to be key. And to me, probably even more important, because those fifth graders are really young. When I worked in Arizona, I worked in a middle school that was fifth through eighth, and those fifth graders are young in comparison to eighth graders. And so it's probably even more challenging for them to navigate that transition. Okay. When we looked at, again, what we thought might be different about instructional components for an RTI process at middle school, you know, the instructional practice should stay the same, right? We should rely on the use of evidence-based instruction. What we think would need to really be emphasized in middle school is that there really needed to be a school-wide approach to literacy. So we found, again, the school, I worked really closely with the junior high in Colorado Springs. And again, they started with that literacy lab. And then when they pushed the process into their core instructional program, they developed a common writing instructional approach with a common writing rubric so that the expectations for writing essays were consistent across teachers. They were scored on the same components, and students practiced writing much more frequently because of this common emphasis across classrooms. When we look at intervention, we really think that the focus on intervention, yes, a key goal is to remediate literacy or math deficits, but another really key component of intervention needs to be that strategy instruction to support learning. So helping kids to develop
those. Do you have to
those,
do this too?
Oh, okay. I'm getting some feedback.
Joshua, let's go.
Molly, I don't know if you're there. I'm getting I had someone else's conversation going on my phone. I don't know if everyone's hearing that or not. So
you should be fine now. Sorry about
okay.
that.
Thanks.
Somebody
no,
joined
okay.
in and they're done.
Okay. So that strategy instruction where we're teaching kids those skills to organize, to plan, break down the learning task, to set timelines, to ask for help, to get started on a larger assignment or larger project, to work effectively with their classmates when they're in small group learning situations. That kind of intervention also really needs to be a critical piece of a Tier 2 system, because so many kids struggle with that, especially when they're transitioning from elementary to middle school. And then finally, for Tier 3, we actually didn't spend a lot of time working in the middle school evaluation study focused on the special ed system, because at the time everything was so new that we were really focused on the core and the Tier 2 program. What we did find, again, and this is through my work with these three other schools, is that special education for a long time in the system was sort of, it was still that parallel. So it was there for the kids who were not responsive or the kids who came in with special education needs, but it really wasn't integrated as part of the system. Our hope is that with the emphasis now in the Common Core on assistive technology and universal design, that we'll really start to think and be more intentional about our use of assistive technology and individually designed instruction that supports student progress towards these larger goals. And again, we'll talk more about that in, I think it's, oh, webinar 3 or 4, I think, is where we'll get into a lot more detail there. Okay. The other thing that we thought was really important to highlight in terms of what RTI should look like at middle school was that there was really going to be more of an emphasis on working together and collaboration. And when this actually didn't start as part of our survey, but it really was something that sort of developed organically as we started to work more with schools and talk to their school teams and about the process. And what we found was that when there were teachers, and again, you know, strong leadership from the building principal, right? And we've all heard that now. That's a consistent finding across nearly any implementation effort, right, is that without the strong leadership to make sure that there's a plan, to make sure that that plan is resourced and staffed and checked on, that implementation efforts at the school level are ineffective. What we also found, though, is that when schools had that collective vision that they really could meet the needs of their students, or you know, our catchphrase, all students can learn, but really it was more about can we really design a system that's responsive to meet our kids where they are, which is a much different mindset than sometimes teachers at middle or high school have, right? Sometimes because again, when learning challenges are a constant in your life, then it's easy to develop frustration and to appear to be not extremely motivated or highly interested in school. And so it's sort of that dangerous situation where it's like, well, yes, our students have responsibility for their own learning, but we also have to remember that if you go to a setting day in and day out in which you're not extremely successful, it's going to be hard to maintain a motivated and positive attitude. And it's going to take some it's going to take some time, and it's going to take creating a really safe and positive learning environment for kids who face those challenges in order to, you know, get past those kinds of issues and get to the learning process. We also found, again, that a common theme across schools was that they all identified priorities. There was not a single school that said, we started on day one trying to implement the entire system, right? They all said, okay, you know, here's a pretty specific problem. We know something about the RTI process, and we think that it's a good fit for addressing this problem. But to get started, we're maybe going to focus on this one issue. So, you know, I already shared the example in Colorado of the literacy lab, and that was actually a very common finding across schools, was most schools were wanting to provide some means of supporting the reading and literacy development of their students. And once they identified that as a priority, then that's where their collective energy went, recognizing that once they got developed the capacity and had the system in place, that they could then start thinking about expanding the system to other areas. And then finally, when schools were really, again, intentional about team structures, not just, you know, we need an RTI team, but really thoughtful about who would be representative of that RTI team, what their specific roles would be, that really facilitated their ability to then solve problems like how do we share information, who's responsible for progress monitoring, data collection, analysis, and preparation for our team meetings, right? So when teams were intentional about those processes, they tended to work much better than when principals just said, I need people who want to be on the RTI team this year. We also found that building leaders who were supportive of providing the right infrastructure, and I feel silly saying this, like as I'm saying it, I'm thinking, well, this is obvious, but as principals who were able to provide the infrastructure, something as simple as collaborative time or scheduling time. So we, in a local school in Idaho, for example, the vice principal, he's like a scheduling guru. So he was able to work, it's a very large middle school, and he was able to create the schedule in such a way that teachers who were involved at the intervention level had a planning period for their regular instruction, but that they also received a progress monitoring period. And the idea was, yes, sometimes they would use that period to collect data, but a lot of times they would also use it to actually maintain and analyze and evaluate the and respond to the data. So, and that was, that's still a pretty unique experience from all the schools that I've worked with. But providing that time to do that really supported his teachers in actual implementation, because at first there was a lot of resistance, like, I will never have time to do all of this progress monitoring. Okay. So that's connected to strong leadership. And then finally, that parental involvement, like everything, right? It's become cliche to say strong leadership and parental involvement. But the idea that we are communicating openly about the RTI process with our parents and also getting their support. You know, parent involvement can mean a lot of things, but schools that really focused on getting parents involved in supporting academic programs and coming in to read with kids who needed that extra reading time, they really, again, it's that more thoughtful and intentional use of parents. So it's not just sending flyers home, but it's really getting parents in who had the time and commitment to supporting those processes in their schools. Okay, so I hope that's given you all a good overview of the RTI process. Based on the responses in terms of the number of you that are already at some stage of the RTI implementation process, I'm sure a lot of it was review, but I hope that the findings of that middle school evaluation study and just thinking about what do these components look like at a middle school setting were helpful for all of you. And what I'd like to know, so for those of you who are going to either attend live or at least listen at a later time to our webinar next week that's focused on assessment considerations, it would be, you know, I have information based on the work that we do, based on what's available, based on the research, but I would love to know more about what information you're hoping to get regarding assessments within the RTI framework. So if you all could either take a minute to enter that in chat now. So Joshua, I'm talking about anything. So screening tools or progress monitoring tools, outcome data, behavioral assessments, anything within that falls under these components of an RTI system that you'd like to know more about. It will help me make sure that I actually create a responsive webinar. At this time too, also, I hope you feel free to enter any questions or comments that you have or that you'd like to share. Okay, so I see several people looking for screening tools and progress monitoring tools, especially in math. Efficient tools. Yeah. Oh, Kristen, that's a great comment. So we're looking for diagnostic assessments. So, okay, we've got the red flag, but we can't necessarily translate screening data into an intervention program. So what do we do from there? Academic vocabulary, great. Wow, these are excellent questions. Okay, writing and reading, progress monitoring. Are there guidelines yet for building your own maze passages from our books? There are, and I will make a note to share those specifically, Joan. Okay, how do we use current assessment data without adding another component? That's a great question, Jerome. We're in such a heavy testing culture, and I teach an assessment course at the university, and you know, we always because we always have a good time in class, and we always end up joking, like, well, when in doubt, the answer is collect more data, right? And which, you know, it's funny to talk about in a classroom, but when you look at the impact on instructional time of too much assessment and then just the stress and pressure that it puts on students, how do we balance that? And so some of those high yield indicators that we look at for the early warning system, I think, I hope all of you will find that useful. So some folks are switching from Ames Web to other systems. I'm assuming that's somewhat related to the adoption of Common Core standards. Someone asked what my opinion of Dibbles is. We can talk about that more next week. So STAR is a screening and progress monitoring system. What we'll do is we'll take a look at the National Center for RTI and the National Intensive Intervention System. Publish those consumer reports information on tools, and I'm actually a member of the screening committee that helps determine those consumer report ratings, and there's progress monitoring tool charts as well, so we'll take a look at some of those. Wow, great questions. Okay, I don't know that much about iReady. I do know somebody who does, so I will try to get some more information on that. I'm just taking a note. Okay. Fabulous questions. If you go back to your school setting and you think of some other questions, we'll be holding the webinar at the same time next week. So, you know, if you could get those, you know, to, I think Molly, by Friday, is that okay, Molly, to say that? I don't want to commit you to something. But if you could get, oh, great. If you could get notes to her, that would give me a little bit of time. Assessment is actually my area of expertise, but I saw a couple that I have heard of that I'm less familiar with, and I would want to make sure I have enough time to do some good research for you. Okay. All right. So, what do you recommend for scoring writing CDMs? Okay. These are great questions, and I hope to see all of you next week. And your responses have given me some really good ideas on how to make sure we structure that webinar so we're responding to all of your questions and comments. So thanks everybody for attending. Thanks for hosting, Molly, and I really hope to see all of you here next week.
Thanks everyone. I did post the survey link, so if you could take a few minutes to complete that, I do appreciate that.